Follow the Water is both a solo show by Ann Diggory and a smaller exhibition of works by six environmental artists, organized in partnership with the Osable Freshwater Center. I asked the participants what they hoped the show would accomplish. Ann Diggory has been exploring the Adirondacks for the past 40 years and painting in other destinations from Arizona and Alaska to France and Morocco. We spoke in March about her work along the Osable watershed. Here are some highlights from that conversation.
What's important for the artist is that we should be dealing with what inspires us and what gets us going. We can take assignments, but I think the truer you are to what you feel for is good. That's, you know, landscape is very essential for me. And then there, such as the project of the working on the Osable, it gets people to see landscape not as a series of nouns, you know, like there's, you know, Mount Mercy, but to actually understand the forms of Mount Mercy or the way it fits into the landscape, how long it's been. They think about how long it's been there, who looked at it previously. Then there's the sense of the environmental awareness of you know, being aware of the importance of nature. So this Osable project partly is to make people realize how connected a watershed is from the top of Mercy to Lake Champlain and understand more how to support the work to that's protecting it in many ways, protecting it for recreation, protecting it for the health of the planet, drinking water. So landscape can get people out to look at something differently. I think that's what the word I've been using for this show is a lot seem to be breadth, that my work shows the breadth of the area and the breadth of, you know, water, you know, different kinds of rivers, streams, marshes, lakes, you know, all working together, but also the breadth of my work in terms of sketches and long paintings and hybrid paintings. But then the breadth of the work we're doing, I think we've settled on a spot. I'm waiting to get that email. And we'll be at Quarry Pool, where the breadth of what one organization does to preserve and inspire stewardship, to understand the science, but then the stewardship. So the art is going to be a way of, you know, five or six of us will be looking at the landscape and creating an artwork, but then five or six scientists or whatever will be look at the same thing. So that breadth of within one place, you can see so much.
Marky Moffat is stewardship manager at Osable Freshwater Center. She and director of operations Madison Stroud spoke to me about their participation in the Follow the Water exhibition at Keen Arts.
So the Osable Freshwater Center is a science organization, and Ann Diggory approached our staff, I'm thinking it might have been our executive director, early on with this idea, and it was attractive to us because we are always looking for ways that we can build stewardship opportunities within the Osable Freshwater watershed. So it's another opportunity for us to make connections with people that are engaged in the watershed in various ways. And that's really what made it attractive to us.
How do you feel about that, Madison?
Oh, I was just going to say, and sort of bringing in a wider audience to our work and the science, because I think that sometimes, you know, science can seem daunting to a layperson. And so having that entryway to create that interest and that, you know, pathway to develop understanding.
Science and art can be intimidating in similar ways. What do you think, Marky?
Well, yeah, and I mean, as a scientist myself, I see art and science as having roots in the same kind of ideas, which are exploring, trying to understand, and maybe even trying to explain or kind of interpret a world for other people. So I think we have that in common as artists and scientists as well, which, you know, I think I know a lot of scientists who are artists. And so maybe for that, it's more of a stress release, but I don't know. I was thinking about something in line with what you were just saying, which is this idea that, and as Madison was getting to earlier, too, is that art makes some things more accessible.
Yeah. And I would just piggyback off of what Mark, you just said. You know, ultimately, there are different ways of seeing, which is a lot of what the show is about. And so you can see, you know, maybe a beautiful, you know, aesthetically beautiful place in, for example, a painting. But beneath that aesthetic beauty, what's going on? Are there things happening in that stream that are not healthy? Why are they not healthy? What is it that is, you know, bad for, you know, that stream? And what is it that might be bad for the species that rely on that stream? And what would a healthier stream look like there? Would it be more aesthetically beautiful, less aesthetically beautiful? Understanding what you're seeing and what it means, creating that baseline and that level of interest, I think, sparks stewardship as well.
Kevin Raines is a painter who has worked with the Adirondack Council, Audubon Society, Nature Conservancy, and UNESCO. We spoke about how art can promote the values of environmental stewardship.
Well, I guess the purest way is if I can actually recreate to some degree the ecstatic beauty of that moment, or the timeless beauty, or the silent beauty, whatever it is, if I can bring that beauty, which means life and death or time, then I have a shot of getting, no matter what I'm painting. For me, I am in the woods on water all the time. That's where I want to be all the time. I live in the Adirondacks now because in the 80s, I knew of it, having lived in Montreal and spent a lot of time down here. But in the 80s, I shifted over to landscape painting, and I would start to draw, and I began to feel it in my heart again. I sense color in my sternum. I know it sounds weird, but that's where I sense it. So what I'm doing now is I'm trying to find that sternum place again. So if, in answer to your question, that's how I've done it in the past. And it requires like you're saying, the bureaucracy that knows what it's doing, whether it's a gallery or an art conservation organization. Eventually, those two things merge, and part of the fulcrum, which is time, is the science, because the science reflects what happened in there over time. And it's so beautiful. And it's sort of like looking into a world in a world in a world.
Rachel Finn graduated from Yale School of Art. She was part of the New York art scene before moving to the Adirondacks, where she became an award-winning fly fishing guide. I asked Rachel how art and science complement one another.
I think a lot of people think of science and so forth as being very intimidating, and maybe art's less intimidating, but some people find art intimidating too.
I am out there and I see these things and I experience these things, and they're beautiful. And I think I've spent not my whole life, but a long time, like trying to figure out a way to talk about it, the things that I'm seeing, and what? Spit out like the things that I get from it. And so for me, it's more comes from a process, you know, of right. Making the painting. And I think music does this too. Like really good music, like captures like something that transcends. Winslow Homer is one of my favorite painters. That dude could do both. He had the innate sense of the place and the experience, but the facility and mastery and poetic,
right,
you know, ness of working materials in a way where like he got more out of it than just depicting it, you know? I also like to look close at things. And that's, to me, was one of the things that attracted me about fly fishing as just an experience. Like, I'm in a river by myself, walking around, and I'm looking at like the pattern of the way that foam comes around that rock or the lichen on that, or then I'm like the sun all over, you know, and you're just, you know, like, I'd love to make a painting about that, but I don't want to just draw that moment. That's not what I'm talking about. I hope that they'll take some time to, especially if they live here, to slow down a little and look at things and look at the river if you're not familiar with it. And I don't mean you have to go fishing, but just take a walk by it.
Saranac Lake native Tim Fortune received his BFA from Tyler School of Art and a master's in studio art at NYU. I was curious about what brought him back to the Adirondacks in 1984, how his art celebrates a forever wild regional spirit, and thoughts on the importance of watershed sustainability.
Just the pure element of water has always been an inspiration generally for my work. I spent 2 summers in Venice, Italy, surrounded by water. I grew up in Saranac Lake across the street from a lake. So water has always been in my life. And when I moved back, I decided to reinvent myself and just simply go into nature and paint whatever, you know, hits me. And the first thing that hit me was just the sound of moving water as I was walking through the woods, and as it does draw anybody. And then as I stood there and saw the activity of the water moving in its dynamic, visual and multi-sensory experience, I started to paint water almost exclusively. If people asked, what does Tim paint? They would say, well, he paints rocks and water. That was kind of my identity for several years. And so just generally, I appreciate the fresh water, the nature, you know, all of that. I'm just intuitively, instinctively drawn to that, to have it affect my work. And it still does. But I've moved to other inspirations in nature. I want people to kind of have a sense that they're in that environment and at that specific spot, as opposed to, you know, a window that captures just a part of the water. It's kind of more of an immersive experience that I had, and I wanted to pass that on to the viewer. I hope it'll spark something in their spirit, in their unconsciousness, perhaps, that they are connected in a nonverbal way.
Joy Muller-Makula creates landscape-inspired three-dimensional artworks using felted wool and water. I caught up with her at the trailhead to Quarry Pool along New York State Highway 86.
Well, first of all, what I'm using is an environmentally great medium, because wool, if you bury it in the ground, it's going to be gone within 2 years max, if not 1 year. That was an experiment done by Prince Charles. I try to use wool that is dyed in a sustainable way, or I get wool that is somebody's excess because they're leaving the felting or spinning business. All the locks or the curls in my water pieces come from local farms in Washington County. So there's my medium being ecologically sustainable. And then there's what I'm saying, which is just pay attention to the water. Pay attention to the watershed. Keep it clean. It's all we've got. Water only stays in rivers for an average of 2 weeks and then it's gone. 2.5% of fresh water, of our water, is fresh. And of that, 70% is frozen in glaciers and permafrost. 30% isn't groundwater between rocks and sediment. And 0.33 is in lakes, and 0.03 is in the atmospheric, and 0.006 is in rivers. So we pay the most attention to rivers. It nourishes us. It is, for most of us, our drinking source. And yet it's this tiny, tiny living little percentage. Plus, an even smaller percentage of that is in all living things, including us. So to me, water is like our interconnectedness in the whole, on the whole earth.
James Prozac is an artist, writer, and naturalist whose work pays homage to the history of art, natural sciences, and environmental priorities. The interconnectedness of nature, the ephemerality of boundaries, and the loss of cultural and biological diversity are major themes of Prozac's work. Here are a few outtakes from a recent conversation with James.
I think that art is another way to illuminate many things, but among them is the history of natural history work that naturalists and scientists do. I think that science and art are both rooted in observation of the world around us, which is the natural world. Some people have a problem with the term nature because it suggests something separate from us. But when I say nature, I mean everything, including the built environment, because we're part of nature and the things we make are as natural as a, you know, hornet's nest or something. Art is another way to process human observation. Science does it in a more clinical, systematic way because that's just the way it works. You have to try to measure, you have to sort of simplify and reduce the world to do an experiment in nature, because you can't really measure all the things that are influencing everything in the world. But I chose art as a, I didn't choose it really. But art was a more natural avenue for me to make explorations in nature than science, because I don't think I have the temperament for to do kind of measured, repeatable experiments.
What do you hope people will take away from the exhibition?
Maybe somebody's visiting and they come into that church and the work in there helps them form a deeper connection with the place. It's like, you know, you can have your own direct experience, which is the best, probably not the best, but, you know, hiking up Gothics or something, and the feeling of the numinous and the awesome on a beautiful autumn day when the sky is blue and the trees are just crazy colors. But, you know, the looking at art is a kind of secondary experience, because it's the world processed through a single human brain onto a surface or through a material. And that, for a lot of people, including myself, that's a part of the experience that you can have in the mind. It enhances the mental experience that carries on after the actual experience. So I think for a lot of reasons that it helps people fall even more deeply in love with the environment, I would think. At least it did for me.
You have been listening to the participants of Follow the Water, an exhibition by Ann Diggory and six invited artists, organized in partnership with the Osable Freshwater Center. The show at Keen Arts runs through July 27th at 10081 Route 73 in Keene, New York, 12942. For hours and directions, call 914-309-7095. I'm James McElhenney. Thanks for listening.